Luke 10:1-5. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. After these things, the Lord appointed 70 also sent and sent them two by two before his face into every city and place where himself was about to go. Then he said to them, "The harvest truly is great, but laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Go your way. Behold, I sent you out as lambs among wolves. Carry neither money bag, knapsack, nor sandals, and greet no one along the road, but whatever house you enter, first say peace to the house."
On their way to Jerusalem, he begins this discourse, as Garrett just read for us, saying, "After this, the Lord appointed 70 others." This "after this" phrase provides a bridge to back earlier in the book when Jesus illustrated the cost of discipleship, because three would-be disciples found the cost just a little too high. And this theme of going and growing continues in the book as we look as Jesus commissions 70 new disciples or 70 new missionaries. Now, with these things in mind, dear friends, members, visitors, I declare unto you that the Lord's church, specifically the church at Conyers, is still standing, but not standing still. Amen? With these things in mind, it came to me in looking at some things that, to the best of my knowledge, and if somebody can correct me, that would be fine, but I believe that 2017 will make the 50th year that the church has been meeting here in Conyers. The church began meeting in an old house over on Green Street. And then there was a building built there. It's still there. It's turned into some kind of office building. I think it's for lease now. And then later on, the congregation moved here and began to meet here. And the building has been built and then added on to over the years. But I assert to you, the Lord's church, and specifically the congregation at Conyers, is still standing and not standing still. We have much to do, folks, though, to get ready for the next 50 years. We've got a lot to do to get ready for those things. And today we're going to consider that in this look at these things with the idea of harvest in mind. We're going to consider what it means to harvest and how we can improve our harvests and when is the best time to harvest. Because after 49 years, the Church of Conyers is certainly not standing still. So let's think about this idea of harvest. Now, most anyone who knows me, many of you do know me very well, you know I like the mornings. I like early morning. I know that everyone else doesn't like that. It seems like I'm by myself in the house because I like early. Everyone else doesn't. When I come by and speak, I get the, "Okay, you know, go away." But I like mornings. And you know, this week has been a very busy week for me. What about you? It's been a challenging time. I've been on my way to handle things that I needed to do very early every morning because I was trying to get done things that needed to be handled, if you will, physically in the cool of the day. And since the first week of Camp Inagahie starts today, by the way, the group at Fayetteville, their week begins today. There were things that needed to be done out there and some things that we had a part in here at Conyers that I took Caleb in tow, you know, early in the morning, and we went out there and handled some of those things. First thing on Thursday and Friday, we got those things taken care of. And, you know, during this time of year, I really like the mornings even better because they're beautiful. And the air just smells a little bit different to me in the summertime. You know, it reminds me of a time when tractors need to be running, crops, that first round of crops need to be gathered in, and those things need to be going. And I smell that first thing in the morning. It's the first thing that comes to my mind is getting out and getting those things together. And for the farmer, by the way, that this time is a time of essence for him, waiting for the ripening crop to be at just the right time and watching for the rain to balance whether or not it's time to go pick and then to pick at the right time so that things don't rot on the vine. Now, James reminds us of the essence of time. If you will, look with me at James chapter 4, beginning at verse 13. James tells us, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a town and spend a year there and trade or make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring, for what is your life? For you are a mist or a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." Now, with these things in mind, I'd like for you to consider your own personal harvests for a moment. And these things, this is just a word that takes us across a span of ideas. Your own personal harvest. You see, some have had great financial gain in personal harvest and have done very well. Some have done very well in taking care of themselves or in very great physical gain, and their harvest is a physical one. And maybe your gain is a familial one, like faithful children and grandchildren. And maybe you've had spiritual gain, a spiritual harvest, if you will, by having many successful Bible studies. All of these successes do relate to a harvest. So what does it mean, actually, to harvest? Well, Webster's Dictionary defines harvesting as the gathering in of ripe crops or fodder, is where they put it. And I said, fodder, that's not what I think of. I think of that something being in the way, but that's the way that they put it. But we all know that there is more to it than that, don't we? There's a lot of work involved. It's hard work. It's dirty work. It's dusty work. It is real work, sometimes we'll say, because it's physical. And harvesting is something that's important to the farmer, particularly because his entire livelihood rides on it, and he's very passionate about it. And you have to be in these days and times because it's a very difficult thing to do to run a farm, if you will, because there's not a lot of things that are really positive in your direction. Because, you see, we have become so accustomed to thinking that fruit comes from Kroger that we don't think a whole lot about the guys who are trying to produce that stuff. The same thing with corn and meat and all those kinds of things. So because that's the case, the farmer has a lot of pushback. He has a lot of difficulty getting things done. Would you believe me if I told you that there was actually consideration in a couple of states about cattle farmers that had to do with, we'll just say air pollution, okay? Think on that for a minute. Air pollution from cows, really? But that's the kind of thing that farmers have to deal with. Now think about this for a minute. As we, as God's people, are trying to harvest for Him, we have a lot of pushback too, do we not? We have those who think, well, just everybody and anybody and anything can do this kind of thing. But really being a Christian according to God's plan in this world we live in is not so easy. Not because God gave us something we can't do, but because we have to deal with many roadblocks and many of those things that get in the way. But harvesting, gathering those things in, it is something that brings great joy when the harvest is plenteous. But it's something also that can break your heart when it's slim. And some people, well, they quit when the harvest is slim. How easy it is, by the way, to give up when things get tough. My friends, I share with you this thought. There is hope in sticking with it. There is hope in doing what God would have you to do. For the farmer, he might have to get some new ground because the ground might be fallow. For the Christian, we may have to move into a different area. If we've been working with someone and it's not working, maybe we need to continue to work, but we need not to give up. We need to be a people who are going and growing. You see, it's great to see the fruit of our labor before our eyes, but sometimes we plant seeds that don't come up for many, many years. We need to keep those things in mind and not grow faint of heart because we are doing good. When we see those things come up, though, before our eyes, it's such a great thing to see that which we have spent so much time with and so much time in nurturing and watering and protecting at every means of our disposal. It's really a great thing to do, to see it. And that in and of itself provides for us the reason why we do it. We do it because we see it's worth it. We do it because there's satisfaction in success. We do it because of the long hours and all of the passion we put into these things provide a plenteous harvest. But to do that, we need to believe what Jesus has said to us when it comes to those things, spiritually speaking. When we look back at Luke chapter 10 and verse 2, Jesus said, the harvest is plenteous. You know what he meant by that? There's a lot of fruit to gather in. There's a lot to bring in. Jesus took advantage of a teachable moment, as John records for us in chapter 4, beginning at verse 33. For you see, there the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought something to eat? And Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Do you not say there are 4 months and then comes the harvest? Now watch this. Underline this if you've got a pencil. Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see the fields are white unto harvest. We have a community that is white unto harvest. We have so many to reach out to and so much work to do. And we can be this congregation that is going and growing and doing what God asks us to do. The question for us is, do we believe Jesus? Do we believe him in what he said? If we do, and our harvest has still been slim, I believe that there's a lot of work out there to do, spiritually speaking, and still my harvest is slim, what am I doing? What am I doing? I need to improve my harvest. Well, I'm going to provide for you a DVO plan to improve your harvest. DVO. Now, I use those three letters because they're going to describe those things that we're going to recognize this morning, D, V, and O. Because any time you go to look at something that's being done in the farming world, there's always some kind of letters piled up by an organization or something else like that, some sort of an acronym. I don't know what it means. You have to look it up. Well, the first one we're going to talk about today is recognizing the letter D, recognize doubt. Recognize doubt. Recognizing doubt in ourselves, even. Look with me, if you will, at Mark chapter 10, and we'll begin reading there at verse 17. I've been reading this morning from the English Standard Version. And as he was setting out on his journey, a man ran up and knelt before him, speaking of Jesus here. And he asked him, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Now Jesus said, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments: do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not defraud, honor your father and mother." Now he said to them, "Teacher, all these things I have kept from my youth." And Jesus said, looking at him, loved him, and said to him, "You lack one thing. Go and sell all that you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come and follow me." Disheartened by the saying, disappointed, if you will, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Why did he go away sorrowfully? I assert to you, it is because he doubted and did not trust what Jesus said to him. He doubted and did not trust. Sorrowful to me means that when he walked away, he had an internal struggle. He heard what Jesus said. He had seen others be successful, I'm sure. And he knew that Jesus was who he said he was. And still, he struggled on the inside to completely give himself to God's plan. He had to hold on to those things that were physical, those things that he could see, those things that he could put his hands on. He had great possessions, and I'm sure he was very prideful as well about what all he had accomplished and keeping those commandments that he knew that were those things that God would have him to do. He had kept all those commandments. He had this great big pile of possessions, and Jesus said, "There's one thing you lack. Just give them up and follow me." True enough, his priorities were probably out of whack. He wanted to hold on to those things, but it's pretty obvious to me that he doubted what Jesus had to say. And he walked away saddened because he was struggling on the inside. Have you ever put yourself in that spot? Have you ever been someone who said, I could do more for God, but, oh, the struggle to give up whatever it is, to give himself fully, to give yourself fully to him. And it might mean that I would have to do some things differently in my life, and it might mean that there's some public things that I need to straighten out and come before the congregation and ask for forgiveness of. And if I go down front, people will, you fill in the blank. You fill in the blank. This excuse is nothing but doubt. Doubt because we're not believing what Jesus said to us. Doubt lives right next door to discouragement. And discouragement is probably one of the greatest tools that Satan has, and they live right next door to each other. They're with each other constantly. So with that in mind, let's ask ourselves some honest questions. And these are rhetorical, so I'm not asking for someone to respond to me, but could it be that I have really been able to do more for God? I mean, if I was completely honest, could I have been able to do more for God? I've done all the basic fundamental things, but am I really as active as I could be? If I keep telling myself that I have done all the right things, am I not kind of like the rich young ruler? Well, all of these things I have kept from my youth. But why? Why maybe then are my crops slim? The fruit of my spiritual life, why? Why is it slim? Why have I not been able to have more spiritual influence on others? Could it be that I've been running my tractor in circles, making a big dust so everybody will think I'm busy, but I'm too afraid to get out of my comfort zone and really go and grow. Friend, I must share with you that you are the only one that is human that can clearly recognize what you can do for God. But God knows. He knows. So the question we have to ask for ourselves is, what have I been doing? You know, there are many, by the way, that I know that knock themselves out every day. I saw it yesterday. I've seen it this past week. All the things that I talked to you about, I've been busy, 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 and there have been people elbow to elbow getting things done as well, just busy as they can go, and not just stirring up a lot of dust, actually making things happen. And that's a great thing. So we have to ask all of ourselves, am I doing? Am I going? Am I growing? Because you see, God values your soul. And he wants you to join him in heaven. And if I were to ask each individual in this room, everyone in this room would say, yes, I realize that God values my soul. And yes, I realize that he wants me to go to heaven. And so as well as recognizing doubt, I need to recognize value. I need to recognize value. D for doubt, V for value. You see, Jesus reminds us, as we look at Matthew 16:26, which is not up here, by the way, Matthew 16:26, Jesus raises the question, for what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his own soul? What shall a man give in return for his soul? Now, the rich young ruler was willing to trade his soul for his financial success, for those things that he could put his hands on, those things that he could feel some security about. Now, I ask you to consider someone that you know that's very wealthy, or maybe someone you know of that's very wealthy. As I thought on these things, one came to my mind, whether you love him or hate him, is Donald Trump. We can love him or hate him, but one thing's for sure, the man's rolling in dough. And, you know, when we think about that, think about this. What if he came to you and he said, I am dying and I want to give you all of my worldly possessions. I want to give you everything, all the Trump Towers, all the planes, all the boats, everything. I want to give you and you alone everything. All you have to do is say, I don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. That's all you have to say. Now, you know what? I saw a lot of this. No way. Some people went, I'm dreaming. And here's the real thing. What if it really happened to you? Well, Jeff, that sounds like a fairy tale. What if that happened to you? Would you be willing to forfeit all of those earthly things to have never denied Jesus as the Son of God? What if I told you that Jesus has promised you more than Trump and Oprah have together? He's promised you a place, a home, in a place called heaven, more beautiful than anything we can imagine. You know how beautiful it is to stand on a mountaintop and see the glory of God's creation. You know how beautiful it is to stand on the beach and listen to the water roll. You know how beautiful it is to be in the woods and hear the quiet that is all around, that God has created these wonderful things. These things don't hold in comparison for what he has in store for us. John, in his best ability to describe those things, can only paint us physical pictures that we can understand. That's why it's so important as God's people that we go and that we grow, because we need to get into that place called heaven. And since God values you and your soul, we need to understand that he values every single soul and get that message to them. God is not a respecter of persons. We see that in Acts chapter 10 and verse 34. In God's eyes, every person truly has equal value. And if they had control of every physical thing on this earth, everything that Trump's got, everything that Oprah's got, everything that Putin controls, everything that anybody has, if they had the whole world, God values a single soul more than that. We've got work to do, folks. As his people, we can be about his business and go and grow. And if we believe that he values everyone equally, then maybe it's a time for a change in our behavior. Looking at others with the same value as ourselves, it clears our vision and helps us to recognize opportunity. And there's the O. Doubt, value, and opportunity. When we look back at Mark 10:17, we see that the rich young ruler did not recognize his opportunity to serve God. It was just not about the short-term reward, but it was about the eternal reward. Have you been looking around lately to truly recognize the opportunities that you have to serve God? Tomorrow, Vacation Bible School will start. And you know how you can tell the people who are involved in Vacation Bible School? Just look around at the end of services and you'll see people doing this. They're very busy. They're obsessing. They want to make sure everything is just right for Vacation Bible School. Now, when you look at those people, if you say, you know, sometimes those Vacation Bible School people, they drive me crazy. So here's what we can do. You want to really mess with the people who are working so hard for Vacation Bible School? I'm going to put it out here. Here's how you do it. Invite your whole neighborhood. Go ahead and invite your whole neighborhood. Invite, bring them in by the van loads. The teachers are just fixing them to leave. Bring the whole neighborhood. Now get a car and fill it out so we don't drive the registration people crazy. Fill it out. Have a card filled out. You've got an opportunity to go. You say, well, you know, my children are grown. My children are this. You know what? There's still kids in your neighborhood, I bet. Invite kids to come. And here's what else you're going to do. You're creating a lot of work for the follow-up team after Vacation Bible School. Because one of our points this year is to make sure that we follow up with every single visiting family that we have for Vacation Bible School this year to try to get some more Bible studies. We had a couple last year. We're going to get more this year. Our congregation is going and growing. It's a congregation that can do these kinds of things. And we can. We can. Will you help? Will you help? Some folks say, well, I'm not a teacher. I don't want to, you know, kids scare me to death. Well, invite the kids in your neighborhood. Put them in your car. Put earplugs in and bring them. You can do that. So, well, Jeff, you don't understand. When those kids get in the car, you don't want me driving all those kids in the car. Okay, I tell you what. This afternoon, go to Kroger and buy some cookies with no peanuts in them. No nuts. And, you know, if you need somebody to give some peanuts to, that's me, okay? But don't give the kids any peanuts. Get some cookies. Get some Kool-Aid. We need some more. We need to have plenty down there for the kids that are in Vacation Bible School. You can do that. That's easy to do. There's something that you can do to help be a part of a going and growing congregation. And then some of you might say, well, you know, I'm not quite as passive-aggressive, so I don't want to cause a problem for the teachers. So that's a good thing. But maybe I could help out with something that's coming up in about a month, camp. You know, I'm one of the people that obsesses about camp. And you can see the people who are obsessing about camp right now. You know how you can recognize them? Because they're hearing the Vacation Bible School stuff that we need to be busy with, and they've got a distant look in their eye. Because camp is coming. It's coming down the rail. The VBS people are there already going. And that time is coming for camp people. So what can I do to help out with camp? Well, we need counselors. We've got background checks back there in the back on the right-hand side. Take one of those background checks, fill it out. We run the background checks. We do that because we're protecting the children, by the way. But we need more counselors for camp. Starts July the 10th, by the way. Can you do something? It might be coming out and teaching a Bible class. It might be praying for the people who are going to start tomorrow working with Vacation Bible School and praying for the people who are going to have camp in about a month away. You know, prayer does amazing things. We discount that, I'm afraid, too often. We throw that term around. Well, I'm praying for you. Are you really? Prayer is something that we can do. That's something that a going and growing congregation can do. And we can be busy about the Lord's work. And so with those things in mind, with so much to do, the question is, when is the best time to start gathering our harvest? Well, I assert to you that it is now. James told us plainly that we are but just here for a very short time, like a mist or a vapor that flourishes away. So when do we get busy? Now is the time. To get busy working for God, though, we need to make sure that there are things we're going to plan. Jesus himself told us that there are going to be people who are going to say, Lord, I did some amazing things in your name. And he's going to say, depart from me, for I never knew you. Why would he do that? Because they didn't give themselves to him fully. Because they didn't really believe in him. He tells us, as John records in chapter 8, verse 24, that we need to believe that he is the Son of God. And that means that we're going to let him be the Lord of our lives. Would you be willing to go and grow and allow Jesus to be Lord of your life this morning? And that means he's going to make a difference in your life. And making a difference means we're going to change from maybe the things that we did before. Maybe we were telling ourselves that